present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with an advert spotted in the Harpenden Focus, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Cafe Jira. Come and experience our wonderful selection of seafood dishes. Our speciality is duck.
And our thanks to Geoffrey Burke for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Simon Evans. And opposite them on my left, Carrie Quinlan and Andy Hamilton. Francis, we start with a musical clue.
Move over, darling.
About to give in.
Move over, darling.
And though it's not right, I'm too weak to fight it somehow. 'Cause I want you right now.
Yes, indeed, that was a Move Over, Darling by Doris Day. You know, it's very annoying. Because I ordered that CD from Amazon, and instead I got one with 25 million names and addresses on it. Righto, Francis. Who has been caused a great deal of pain by a couple of slipped discs?
Well, it's Alistair. Darling.
God bless.
And I think that is the problem, isn't it? The name like that, the moment he became Chancellor, every headline writer in Fleet Street wanted to get going on it. And they've had their chance now. And so it's full of Move Over, Darling, and Darling, Be Home Soon, and Skip to the Loo, My Darling, is the Sun front page had it, which I didn't think the Sun was the sort of paper that used the word loo. I thought it was more of a toilet paper. But there we are. It's in every sense of the phrase, actually. Do you see, even there was an MP got in on it. There was some Plaid Cymru MP who said to Gordon Brown, is it not time for Blackadder to get rid of Darling? And Brown amazingly replied, I have already answered that question. But God knows what they're going to do when Ed Balls has his first foul up. It's in the North East, this office. And it did make me think, this thing about computers and dodgy people getting hold of it. Like those emails you have saying, I used to be the foreign minister of Nigeria until recently. I have millions of pounds. I wonder if you could send me your bank account details so I can share them with you. And I thought, who is that out-of-office politician, embittered, on the make, who used to have a constituency in the North East? I think he's typing the email now, don't you think? Clay, I used to be Prime Minister of Britain, and I've got millions of pounds. I've got your bank details already from the CD, so if you could just send me your password and...
I think it's important that we don't trigger any panic, though, don't you? Because, I mean, you know, we've got to get this into context, as Mr. Darling pointed out. First of all, it is quite a sturdy envelope. And almost certainly the flap was probably down. And then this other thing about whether or not it's fallen into the wrong hands, well, it started out in the wrong hands, but it seems to me that the key issue as to whether or not criminals get hold of it is what the individual wrote on the CD. Because if he took his, you know, his marker pen and he wrote for the attention of Bob, I think we're all right. But if he's written financial details of 15 million people... I think we might be in a bit spot of
otherwise bother. Somebody will just listen to it and think, well, this must be that new Radiohead album. This is rubbish, no wonder no one paid for it.
It is password protected, though. I think that's important to mention. So unless whoever the criminals are know what Alistair Darling's goldfish is called, then I'm guessing it's Gordon. That's what I try first.
I like Gordon Brown saying, you know, we must do a thorough search. And you just think, what is that, like the grown-up version of saying, have you really looked?
The other one that I thought was extraordinary in the detail of the story was that this individual, who we don't know his identity yet and probably never will for his own safety, but he cheerily ran off the CDs and whacked them off in the post to the National Audit Office. The National Audit Office rang up and said, we haven't received those CDs. He said, not the way, I'll do you two more. This is what happened. He then they got the second two, and then they said, oh, we still haven't received the first one.
But I think people are showing a ridiculous degree of optimism about registered post. People are going, oh, I can't believe he didn't send it registered post, as if that helps. All registered post is alert the postman to the fact that it's probably something worth nicking.
I think there is an obvious suspect, actually. Obviously, they'll be keeping an eye on sort of strange financial patterns and things. But I think that if in the next few weeks Northern Rock announced they've turned the corner. I think we'll know, won't we?
Everything leads back to Darling. Isn't it amazing? Until 2 weeks ago, I bet nobody knew that he was Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Yeah.
Totally invisible man. And well, suddenly now, every day, he has to stand up in the House and announce he's made another cock-up.
He appointed McLaren. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. This is the news that the whole of the child benefit database, all of it, 25 million names, addresses and bank details, was burned onto a couple of CDs and given to a bloke on a motorbike who lost it. And there are times you just feel that satire is superfluous. Gary, for heaven's sake, sit up straight, girl, put your tie on properly, you're a quiz show panellist, not an urban gorilla. Now then.
Mother?
Who got shirty with the kids this week?
David Cameron.
Yeah, was it?
It's Tory education policy, and David Cameron's done it again. He's been putting his political career on the line a lot the last couple of weeks. A week or two ago, he came out and said he thought rape was a bad thing. extraordinary. And this week, he's once again put his head above the parapet and said that it might be a good idea if schools taught children things. Like reading. He also said that schools should be much bigger on discipline and uniforms should be smarter and there should be prefects and head boys and girls at schools. So basically he's saying, why can't everywhere be like Eton?
Yeah.
It was brilliant. We had tailcoats and sponge bag trousers and servants and we were all worth millions. And the world would be a better place if everyone was more like that. Is the same. And now I'm off to the drones because Barmy Fungy Phipps is having a hell of a time. Is essentially his education policy.
He said he thought that getting children to tuck their shirts in was the best way to get them to pull their socks up, and I thought, well...
It makes it a lot more fun if you do it all in one move, that way.
Very strange suspenders, I think.
It's also very... he said tucking in their shirts and, I think, straightening their ties.
Mm.
It's a variant on the old healthy mind and a healthy body principle that if you're well-dressed, you'll be well-behaved, according to Cameron. This is from a man whose most famous photo is of him incredibly well-dressed at Oxford in his Bullingdon Club white tie and tails. And the only other thing anyone knows about this wretched club is that they go to restaurants and get very drunk and smash the place up. That's all they've ever done for the last 60 years.
He also said that he would like to see pupils stand up when teachers enter the room. And I thought, he hasn't really clocked the size of modern kids, has he? If you're a teacher and all the kids stand up, you're going to be terrified.
This is the exciting new revolution in education policy thinking by David Cameron, who's published a paper advising teachers to tell children to tuck their shirts in. The report is called Raising the Bar, Closing the Gap, and subtitled Shooting the Breeze, Stating the Obvious. Andy, oh, here we go. Blah, 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 football, blah, blah. Croatia, blah, blah. Steve McLaren. I tell you what, you comment about that, I'll have a little nap.
Well, this is... I heard it again today, the most meaningless catchphrase of the 21st century, which is, I take full responsibility. Everybody bloody says it now, don't they? I take full responsibility. You say, are you going to resign? No.
That could be the new motto they're looking for.
Yeah, the national motto. I take full responsibility. It might just as well be, you know, turned out nice again. But anyway, Steve McLaren came out with it when he was talking about the defeat to Croatia. I mean, obviously England missed a golden opportunity because Israel had done us a huge favour, although they did owe us one for the Balfour Declaration in 1948. Now, you see, that's a topical joke, isn't it? And not only was it an ignominious performance by the England team, but also the Wembley Stadium didn't come out of it very well. A lot of fans came away complaining that there were some serious design flaws with the stadium. Apparently, the seats are facing the pitch. Now, I think somebody in the audience got to the end of my joke before me. Thus implying that that's not the newest joke in the world. Now, I'll be very angry if that's not edited out. So anyway, yeah, I don't want to bore you.
No, you have already.
No, you're wrong. Unlike Alistair Darling, he has gone.
Yeah, I know, but he didn't go after the game. He wouldn't resign. He couldn't resign because if he resigned, he might have forfeited his £2.5 million worth of shame and opprobrium. He didn't do the honourable thing.
I love that about the British. Honest to goodness, you lose 25 million names and addresses and you keep your job. You basically lose what is fundamentally a children's game. And you're out. That's it. It's finished.
I've been rubbish at lots of jobs in my life and I've never got £2.5 million for it. That's a great
job. You've got to show promise initially and then be rubbish.
That's where I've been going wrong.
No offence, obviously. What I have noticed is that he has not yet been likened to a single root vegetable, which is very disappointing. After Turner...
They've run out, haven't they? I mean, what's left?
The Swede was the Swede, of course, which was a brilliant preemptive strike by the FA actually employing a root vegetable. He is clearly a radish head, isn't he, McLaren? He is very radish-like. Some people say beetroot, but I think he's got that more kind of rubbed raw look about him.
But seriously, Andy, do you not think the real problem is that with the 4-1-4-1 system, you're always going to leave a team having to pump long balls out?
Oh, you're only a player short of credibility there. 4-1-4.
All right, I'm reading it.
I want to hear you say that again.
Enough. This is the apparently riveting story that 22 grown men played a game and some of them didn't win.
Says we who are doing this for a living.
It's been promised that the FA will conduct a root and branch review of the England team set-up led by the top banana of the FA, Brian Barwick. Meanwhile, the White Star Line have announced a root and branch review of the Titanic's maiden voyage. To be led by the iceberg. At the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Simon have got 4, but so have Andy and Carrie. Start round 2 with a cutting from the Croydon Guardian.
2 council street wardens who helped lift a 14-ton bus off an injured schoolboy are to be commended for their heroic actions. One said, "We could see the kid under the bus. He was in shock and in extreme pain. We used our training to assess what was best to do, and we decided he was probably better off not being under the bus."
And our thanks to Stephen Wright for spotting that. Simon, have a listen to this.
Diamonds are forever, sparkling around my little finger. Unlike men, the diamonds linger. Men are mere mortals who are not worth going to your grave for.
Simon, who's had a diamond second honeymoon?
Ah, thank goodness. Saved at the last. That was completely baffled then. This will be our beloved monarch and consort who have celebrated their 60th anniversary this year. And good luck to them. They wandered up the aisle where they first were embalmed, or whatever the word is, 6 years ago. And then they took, I was really impressed by this, they're taking a second honeymoon, which is nice for them after all these years to get away again, second honeymoon in Malta, which is where they went the first time around. Which is what I do genuinely like about the Queen, is she is not remotely aspirational, is she? Which I guess is a luxury you can, and it's handy, you know. My parents went to Malta last year on a coach tour. I don't know if that's how they're going, but it's Buckingham Palace is handy for the coach station, isn't it? We know that, yeah. Buckingham Palace Road, nip out the back of the garden, they've probably got some of that luggage on wheels, they can get down there and...
I do think they should have gone on a second honeymoon. The first one gave us Prince Charles, surely.
I tuned into the BBC News and Hugh Edwards said, "Her Majesty the Queen is celebrating 60 years of being married to Prince Philip." I thought, he's celebrating the right verb in that context.
She's certainly drinking a lot.
Well, also, I remember when, years ago, I wrote a biography of a very obscure left... and I found in his papers all this correspondence he had with Prince Philip just before the royal wedding in 47, because in the run-up to it, there was lots of bad publicity for Prince Philip, because he's a bloody foreigner coming over here marrying our Princess Elizabeth. And as it was post-war austerity, there was a feeling that they shouldn't waste money getting married and it would be a cost to the taxpayer. And he was thought to be a bit dodgy anyway. And Tom Dryburgh, this left-wing MP, got all these letters from Prince Philip, who became quite friendly with him, or from Mountbatten, more specifically, his uncle, saying, would you put the word around that my nephew Philip is actually a bit of a lefty? And Dryburgh then proceeded to do this, and they had this correspondence. I'm glad you've got the message out among the Labour backbenchers and in the Morning Star that my nephew Philip, he's secretly quite a socialist, you know. I've been waiting 60 years for this to be proved right. He may turn out to be a KGB sleeper, who knows?
I like the idea that people were worried about a foreigner marrying the Queen. You know, these Greeks coming over here, yes, marrying our Germans.
That's right.
It is the 60th wedding anniversary of the Queen and Prince Philip, who visited their first marital home in Malta this week after attending a state banquet and a Thanksgiving service at Westminster Abbey. And can I just say, to be nice here, that Prince Philip has been a tremendous support to the Queen for the last 60 years, and frankly a gift to the News Quiz, so just... Andy, why is not working for Labour?
Is this our sick note culture?
It is.
There are apparently... I'm always a little bit wary of these stories. There are apparently loads of people scamming, claiming benefit for illnesses that are supposedly sort of like feeling a bit down or not being able to face things today. And a lot of them were too fat to work. And it got me wondering about this big obesity problem, because I also read a statistic that said that by 2020, 40% of the nation will be obese. Now, in electoral terms... that means that anyone who's seeking power, the obese vote will swing it. So I'm rather dreading that the manifestos will be full of taxes on vegetables. and you're allowed to eat supermodels.
If you add to, in fact, your statistic, my favourite statistic, which is the rate of increase in people becoming Elvis impersonators, is such that by 2017, one in three of us...
You can see that happening.
Yeah.
I think the trouble is with the whole culture is that, and a lot of people have said this, is that in the old days, instead of having that kind of benefit, if you were ill or injured yourself and you couldn't work, you stayed at home and a local sort of beneficent society would pay for you. And then if people walked past and saw you gardening vigorously in your front garden, there would be a sort of blame and guilt and so on. And nowadays it's the welfare state, so nobody feels. So I think there should be... people should be connected with the person they're paying for. If you are working and paying national insurance, they should give you the name of somebody who's claiming your bit, and then you can get in touch with them and go and see if they're all right, you know. Pop around and suggest an afternoon's water skiing, and if they jump at it, then you'll know. You know.
2 points for Andy. Billions of pounds are being paid in incapacity benefits to people claiming to be unable to work because they suffer from depression, stress, fatigue and unknown diseases. And that's just Alistair Darling. Last year, over £1 billion was paid to people suffering from a depressive episode, which was later identified as the EastEnders Christmas special. And at the end of round two, Andy and Carrie have got 8 points, but Francis and Simon have leapt into the lead with 10. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from Thursday's Scotsman.
A classically trained opera singer who also worked as a PA, Miss Tanner Jones decided she wanted to branch out into running her own business. She chose to sell organic sex products as she thought it would be fun and appealed to her sense of creativity. She also thought it would fill a gap in the market.
And our thanks to Ian Marin for sending that in.
It is quite an environmental problem. The plastics used are extremely bad for the environment, but
you
there's
suggest
not much
using
you can
an
do.
Actual rabbit instead. That's not going to work.
I don't know what you're talking about. It was sold to me as a neck massage. Francis, why will schools all be singing from the same songbook?
Is this music in schools?
It is, yes.
There's a big Department of Education. It's not called the Department of Education anymore, is it? It's the Department, Ed Balls, anyway, whatever he does. And they want to promote music in schools. And to do this, they've set up a campaign led by Andrew Lloyd Webber, which seems to be a bit self-defeating, I would have thought. getting John Prescott to promote healthy eating in schools. It'll just be compulsory to do Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat every week of the year. But that's what they're going to do. And as a reaction against this, children are now playing the guitar instead of the violin. They were going to play the ukulele. There was a government push a month ago to make children play the ukulele instead of the recorder, but they've dropped that already. These things come and go so fast. Remember, see, this week, Gordon Brown, number 10, put out a statement saying the Prime Minister has never suggested we should have a national motto. It was only about 3 weeks ago. He said exactly that. And now the ukulele's been ditched and they want us all to sing Andrew Lloyd Webber.
That Joseph and his coat story.
Yeah.
I've never understood that, right? A man, he's got seven sons.
Mm.
He gives one of them a flash coat.
Mm.
And he doesn't say, right, you can just have it on Mondays. He doesn't even say the other six. Joseph can have the coat in many colours. You can all have coats with some colours. He gives one son that coat. Then one day he turns around and says, where's Joseph? It's terrible parenting, isn't it?
To be fair, that's not Lloyd Webber's fault, though, is it? That predates him by some distance, I think, that story, doesn't it?
Yeah, but my default position is always to blame Andrew.
Blame Lloyd Webber.
Karaoke lessons will be taught in primary schools as part of a government drive to encourage every child to develop musical talent. And in addition, every child will be entitled to free music tuition for a year or 52 free ringtones. Apparently, ignorance of orchestral instruments is so bad that many British schoolchildren believe a bassoon is President of the United States. Carrie, who does new research suggest wasn't born yesterday?
Oh, babies.
Mm.
Babies at the age of 6 months can tell whether people are nice or nasty and respond accordingly. They like nice people and they don't like nasty people. I think it's down to behaviour rather than having babies have some innate sense of good and evil and can, you know, you show them a picture of Hitler, they recoil. Show them one of Michael Palin and they go towards it. It's
helped. What happens with Michael Jackson? Is that a kind of a hovering?
That's a I think that's come in evolutionarily very, very quickly. Yes, so people who help other people, babies like, and people who don't help other
people. It wasn't actually people, was it? In the experiment, it was puppets.
It was
a triangular puppet which helped puppet up a hill was then popular, and a square puppet which pushed the other puppet back down the hill was popular. I'm not putting a lot of cash on this one yet.
It's also quite a nice hippie-ish image. Yeah. Hey man, the squares are stopping progress.
If you find in a few years' time those babies will eat Dairy Lee but not Kraft cheese slices.
What they may have proved is simply that babies like triangles. Yes. That may be. A new study suggests that long before babies can talk, they already tell friends from enemies. That I didn't get this either. What kind of enemies do babies have? Oh, look, a rusk rustler. The research suggesting that primitive morality is an inherent part of our makeup was published in the journal Nature. And presumably, if it had suggested it was a learnt trait, it would have been published in the rival publication Nurture. That's actually quite a clever joke, I'll have you know.
Fight for it,
sir. I'm in there with it. Andy, what has given paleontologist claws for thought this week?
Oh, this is this massive sea scorpion thing. Yes. With all the scientists with the big craniums and the white coats. They found this thing was 2 metres, which is 8 feet long.
Mm.
And it is a bug, basically, that was 8 feet long. That is not something you're going to go after with a rolled-up newspaper.
I miss megafauna. Because it was a prawn, wasn't it? It was an 8-foot-long prawn.
Some say giant scorpion and some say giant prawn. Personally, I wouldn't call it a prawn to its face. That's what I'm saying.
But imagine the size of the chicken in that paella.
The remains of an 8-foot prawn with razor-sharp claws has been discovered in Germany. Slightly puts your modern seafood allergies to shame, doesn't it? Oh, what are the symptoms? Well, it ripped my head off and ate it. The Geclopterus rinere.
What was that?
Sorry.
What? Oh. Coming on, Miss Scorpion.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, come on, you're off. BBC Newsreader. Oh, did you not have this in the Today programme?
I didn't. I actually crossed it out. I have to admit, I wouldn't say it.
Sorry.
A large scorpion.
Sorry. I'm sorry. This is another BBC scandal. Newsreaders are allowed to cross out bits of the news that they don't like. Is that what you're telling us? Or what don't we know about?
All right, I'll have a go at it now then. Okay.
Go on then.
Geclopterus rinere.
Oh, there you go. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along. Mr. Ween.
Sandy.
Yes, darling.
Oh, don't you start calling me darling as well.
I'm sorry, I glanced quickly, I saw the hair.
It was bad enough being mistaken for Ian Duncan Smith in the old days. Sandy, this is from London Light. A brother and sister from Maine fell out over shaving the flea-infested family cat. Nicholas Palmer, 22, went on the run from police after his 18-year-old sister said he choked and beat her to stop her shaving the moggy. But he came home when she withdrew her allegation. The family has since agreed to try flea powder instead.
Simon. This is a cutting sent in by email from Diana Kohler, which is a good name, and it appeared in the Metro this Wednesday. It's a 60-second interview with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. The question was, you live in LA now, what's your life like? And he said, I am quite insular when I am working. I live very healthily. I have done for a while now. My big thing is going to the gym. It's very LA. And I don't drink alcohol anymore under any circumstances. This interview, as some of you may know, was conducted before Jonathan was arrested this week for public drunkenness and breach of peace in Dublin.
Gary.
This is from the Northern Echo. A nationwide search is underway to find a missing field mouse. Sedge, the field mouse, the mascot of Sedgefield Racecourse, County Durham, was last seen 13 months ago competing in the Mascot Grand National at Huntingdon Racecourse. General Manager Jill Williamson said, Sedge is the second major loss for Sedgefield this year. First, our Prime Minister steps down, and now our giant field mouse mascot goes missing.
Mr. Hamilton.
Sandy, mine is from Kath Boylan, and it is a letter posted on the Times Online. Dear Bell, some time ago I took early retirement from a senior management post. At first I enjoyed the leisure, but it wasn't long before I became bored stiff. A London domestic agency helped me find some training, and I got a place as manservant to a young Arab gentleman who owns a racing stud. I work on a beautiful estate, the duties are well within my capabilities, and the pay supplements my pension agreeably. I'm better off than ever, and haven't been so happy since my wife died.
Thank you very much. Let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Carrie have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Simon with 15. And before we leave you, here is a correction from the Scotsman sent in by John Brand.
On Wednesday, we quoted Ian Davidson, MP, as saying there was so little experience among officials, it was like electoral sex with virgins. In fact, Mr. Davidson said, it's like being lectured about sex by virgins.
And with that, goodbye.
Second part of the newspaper, Francis Green, Simon Evans, Harry Quinlan and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and John Finnemore, with additional material by Madeline Brettingham and Matthew Morton. The producer was Ed Morris.